Welcome to Elmo's World Podcast, and this is Elmo, guys, and I'm with Ty Wilson. He's on the show again, the second time. I think it's been a year, right, Ty, since we
Yeah, it's been a year. It's been a long time, brother.
And I can't believe how much things have changed. You know, like before, when we started, I was a Christian, bro, and I was like chewing you out about your moral, the realism, and you know, like I think we talked about like aborting babies and things like that, like right? Do you remember?
I think so. We talked about abortion. Yeah, we talked about all sorts of things. Yeah. You gave me the runaround, and it was good. I loved it.
Yeah, and I basically do that to all my guests, you know, which is I think what a good interviewer does, right? Like just asks questions objectively, you know. And I guess I proved it myself, right? That I am an objective interviewer, where I do open my mind, and it actually has led to the fact that I changed my own beliefs, right? Just because I opened my ears and listened. You know, I wasn't stubborn, and I welcomed whatever facts or arguments people made to me. And I think that's what a good normal human should do. I guess, you know, like
intellectual honesty, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, like when you talk about intellectual honesty, it also begs the question: like, is ignorance bliss, or do we have to accept the truth, you know, even if it's like doomsday or like brings us misery and pain, you know? Like if I think about me in the past, like I was very happy all the time, you know, like me, I'm like expecting internal heaven, you know, I'm already secure. I did nothing, I just accepted grace and, you know, was saved. And that's it. That's all I had to do. But now I'm like, oh shit, nothing is, life has no meaning. I don't even exist. I'm just an illusion. Like, what the heck, bro? What should normal humans do, you know?
I have some questions about your background because, you had a Baptist background. Am I correct in that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. And so that's similar to mine, right? Like there were some Baptist underpinnings in my background too, which, I mean, you know, American evangelicalism is a mixed bag, but Baptist is definitely in that bag.
Yeah.
When you thought about, because when you kind of paint the picture of, you know, the meaning for your life, that seems a little bit rosy to me.
Rosy.
That wasn't as rosy as my perception was.
Okay.
And I wonder, you know, where that disconnect is. Like, what did you think, like, I don't know, how do you think your life was going to work out? How does that, you know, maybe fit into that rosy picture? You know what I mean?
Like was gonna work out when I was a Christian before, or like right now, like me as
before.
Well, what I would do, or what I was planning to do with my life, was of course, you know, everything I do would be to the glory of God, right? That's what a normal Christian would, you know, you serve, you love, and so you act in the same way. We know, of course, you should never be a hypocrisy. So it needs you to be real inside and out. You know, it's seen in your behavior and also in your intentions. So I guess the meaning of my life would be just that. You know, it's something that you pray about and you think about and contemplate and meditate. But the answer to the meaning of your life, the specific ones, right, is just gonna come to you. It's gonna just gonna be like inspiration. That's what I expected. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because when I think about, you know, the meaning of my life as a former Christian, it was all about the glory of God.
Yeah.
And exactly. That was kind of the main focus. And so, in a certain sense, that was really freeing because I didn't have to worry. You know, whatever I did, I knew that the glory of God was my ultimate purpose, right? Like, and so that was my total focus. and I didn't have to worry about all the minutia as long as I was focused on the glory of God. So that's interesting because I find now, as you know, I've been out, let's see, I don't know how old I am, 35. I left Christianity about 22. So I find now that, you know, the same intentionality that I had before is still there. Like I'm still, you know, really intent on being honest with myself and who I am and what I want to do. And like those things that you said before, but the focus has really shifted from that focus of glory of God to how can I make my life most meaningful for people around me and that sort of thing. So that's interesting. So now that you're, and I'm sorry, you're the interviewer, but
It's okay.
I want to ask you questions. Like now, you know, how has your meaning shifted now? Or are you kind of floating and don't know what that meaning is? Where are you at, bro?
Well, I actually like, because of the deconstruction of my belief system, right? So it was all centered and the foundation was God. And when I lost, when I lost belief in that, everything, it rippled in domino effect and everything just bam, you know, if there's no God, then what? I was in a vacuum. Right. And I guess I was already aware of what nihilism entailed, you know, like the alternative to having a godless, to having a world with a God and having a one without a God, right?
Yeah.
So now I guess the best starting point was nihilism, right? Or at least that would be like, you know, just living in a vacuum. So what is the foundational thing that I can rely on, you know? So I guess I really had to start with why I'm living in the first place. You know, like it's not the most, the first epistemological thing you should do or metaphysical or, you know, like others, like cosmological. That's not the first question like those kind of philosophers would focus on. But I decide like, hey, you know, if I am going to want to try to search the truth and look for the proper foundations, I have to ask myself, like, why am I doing these things in the first place? You know, like I had to question my own motivations for even my own intellectual integrity, because I did leave my previous faith for that. So that means that I have to have some sort of basis for my own intellectual integrity. So I guess it was just me. Right, like I'm just here, you know, a conscious being, having the tools that are available to me, which is like science, you know, skepticism, and other ways we could attain knowledge. Right, so it's my type of methodology is not exclusive to just empiricism, of course. You know, I would also refer to a logical argumentation or rationalism. And the like, even continental philosophy, right? That which is not analytical, but I still like, hey, you know, this might be useful. So I tried really focusing on existentialism, like Camus, which is absurdism, Sartre, which is his like freeing existentialism, Nietzsche, and all the like. But I guess when it comes to me being truly intellectually honest, I don't think their reasons for, you know, maintaining existence is enough. That's why right now I'm a nihilist and life doesn't have any meaning. Like everything is a social construct. Existence precedes essence. You know, I guess you can sort of expand from that.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you exactly kind of what you meant by nihilist, because to me that term has, you know, several different meanings depending on who you're talking to, because, you know, I've talked to some people that use nihilist as a very negative term. especially within Christian apologetics, right? They use that nihilist term as, and so it might be good for the audience here to understand what we mean when we talk about nihilism, absurdism, you know, existentialism, and it kind of gets some footholds on what those terms mean. So when you say nihilism, kind of
when I say nihilism, I'm specifically talking about existential nihilism, right? Which is that life in itself has no inherent meaning or purpose.
By inherent, do you mean teleological meaning?
Teleological.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Right. So in that case, gotcha. Right? If there is no cosmic purpose here or intent, then there's really no, like, then that would mean that I would have to remove any sense of meaning in my own framework that I already live in. So I felt like it's necessary, like, to remove that from the equation, like, of me living for some cosmic inherent purpose. So without that, what do I do, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess it would start from, like, me having a certain, I guess me assuming that that science is very reliable, and you know if we sort of use that to attain some sort of knowledge that we can verify or rely, at least, you know, then we could we can move on from this. So for example, like evolution, right? An understanding of cosmology, like maybe, of course, like starting from the Big Bang and onwards. So in that case, if I'm just an evolved ape, right, the value of my life really is no different from any bacteria or plant or fish or frog or dog, right? And that value is equal to zero, right? In a sense that, in a cosmic sense, you know what I mean? And so that would also reflect on my morality, which is I am a moral nihilist, which is that I think sort of the opposite of a moral realist, right? Where the world is actually absent of any moral reality. So I disagree with Kant. I disagree with any moral realist philosophers about concerning that. Yeah.
Well, and so I want to go back a little bit, because I think that really nails down kind of what you mean by nihilism. I think that's a good clarification. By nihilism, you're not, you know, you're speaking specifically to existential nihilism. I want to go back a little bit to where I'm coming from.
Fix your camera, like the focus, you're just kind of blurry. How does that work?
there we go. Okay. No, it's terrible. Let's see. Is that better? No, it's no. not.
Yeah.
It's not. It's my lighting.
I mean, like, you look handsome, man, you know, so you need to really show it, you know what I mean?
let's see here. There we go. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
So what I was gonna go back to is when I think about my leaving Christianity, I felt a lot of some of those very same feelings. And it's hard. It's hard for me to go back in my mind to that. do you feel, let me ask you this, do you feel that your feelings now are influenced at all by your prior Christian framework? Does that make sense? Like, Does how you view meaning itself and life impact how you're now viewing philosophy and that sort of thing, or have you left that all behind? And you know, I'm off course. For me, that was very much the case, where I struggled with some of these things because I still had those underpinning needs to have some sort of cosmological, teleological meaning impacted upon my life. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I actually, like, I guess I can't deny that that me growing up Baptist made me focus a lot on philosophy, right? Like, for example, when you I first dive into theology, I was like, okay, like because of this verse and that doctrine, you have to conclude this and that. So I started to learn logical syllogisms, you know? And so when I looked at logic, I had to look at from its source, and thus, you know, you go to, from Socrates and or like the Sophists, and then forward to history. Like I studied philosophy and I loved it, right? But I mean, like the emotional side of things, like in like or like any trauma or whatever, I don't have that against Christianity.
Okay.
What really made me like tip the balance for me, like from me being a theist to atheist, was that I just started to realize, hey, do I really think or believe that there is a God? You know, that was really the biggest thing. Like when I started to realize, hey, I don't think there's enough evidence, then it domino effect, boom, you know, like sheesh, you know, it just destroyed the whole paper castle or like paper. You know what I mean?
That the house cards there kind of like, fell.
So for example, if I don't believe in God, then my epistemology, my metaphysics, my moral values, or whatever else that I hold on, they're going to falter, right? Because the foundation is God. And if you don't believe in God, then, you know, everything falls. That's it. I think that was it. Like, if anyone can convince me right now that God exists, I would come back to, like, you know, it's being a theist. I mean, no question. But not really. I don't think there is yet anyone that can prove it to me. I wish there was.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make my family so happy. And if there was a God, I hope that they can convince me of one that is actually truly good and has a good, actual good explanation to why everything sucks.
Well, I think that's, you know, if there is a God and that God is good and that God wants you to know, you know, they would. You know, that's kind of one of the strongest arguments that I've found.
Someone would differ from the other side, you know? Yeah.
I mean, you know, if... And I think that's a really good starting point there of in theological skepticism. Mm-hmm. It's like, if there's a God, that God is good, that God wants me to know, there would be a way to really apprehend them. And, you know, if I'm being really, really honest and I don't think that there's a God, then that God that is good should, you know, appreciate that, you know.
I mean, like, I don't want to comment on that right now because for some viewers, it would feel like I'm strawmanning them, you know, like, oh, but that's not my model of God, you know, like, a lot of them are going to be like triggered, like, hey, you know, that, like, yeah, if that is what you, how you portray God, then, but that's not how God actually works, you know, like there's different models, right? But how I would like try to, like, defend my position on God not existing is what I say is, like, I haven't found any model of God like that, if you look at it comprehensively, is actually perfectly coherent and has no contradictions within the model itself, you know?
And I think that's super honest, you know, that's a super honest way to approach that.
Yeah.
Even the most hardcore apologists, I don't know that they'd be able to really rebut that and come to you and say, hey, you know, you're wrong. Because I think that's really, really hard to rebut that position there.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to your position on moral nihilism, because that kind of piqued my interest there.
By the way,
I think we disagree.
I actually am like exploring moral, you know, nihilism or existentialism. Like saying is like, I'm still on a journey, you know? And
oh, no.
Whatever changes, or like lessons or like truths I'm about to learn, I'm willing to change my position, you know? Yeah. So what about it, bro?
And I know that for sure, but I'm glad you clarified that, you know, for your audience also. Well, so when it comes to moral nihilism, what do you mean? Well, you know, right now, where you're at in your journey, what does that mean to you, and how do you feel about morality?
Well, morality is just a social construct, right? Because we as humans, we evolved to be able to have a cognitive, I guess, capacity to be able to interact with each other. And thus we gave ourselves like standards of behavior that would be acceptable for even for our individuals, for society, and maybe like as a whole human race. You know, we have set these moral standards, and thus, you know, once we've set them, we tried to make justifications for them, which is religion, ethics, and stuff. But from my understanding, and me as a moral nihilist as well, I'm seeing like, hey, you know, what is the framework that morality is upholding? And do I believe this framework? And the thing is, like, I don't agree with the framework itself, not just the answers that people, you know, submit to the framework. So when I talk about framework, I'm referring to, in order for something to be moral, right, or morality to, like, a concept to exist, it relies on moral agents. It relies on moral actions. And moral actions are motivated by moral intentions or sourcing from human will, right? So these are three things. Yeah. But as a nihilist, or at least, like, I don't believe in these things. I don't believe that there is a moral agent. Like, my own sense of individuality is an illusion itself, right? If there is no individual, there's no one actually taking any specific action that should have any distinction in reality. Thus, if there's no distinction there and no individual, there's no free will that actually exists. It's just protons and electrons and neutrons, you know, vibrating. Maybe, like, if you think about, like, string theory, that's all that's happening, right? And so there is no morality, and everything is just social construct, I guess. That's how I look at it. But I mean, one thing I'd like to clarify is, but if you believe that, then do you agree with is murder okay? Is rape okay? Stuff like that. Like, what I would say is, like, I guess I also take the position of an emotivist, right? So I just do believe what I feel like is right or wrong. That's it, you know, and my reactions to such things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so one of the things that has really grown on me as I've left Christianity is that the needs to have some sort of ultimate grounding. Oh, I'm so sorry. My clock is going off. The needs to have some sort of ultimate grounding for morality. These sort of, the moral agency, the moral imperatives there, those are sort of, to me, have developed more as trappings to sort of really crudely explain how
trappings.
Our morality.
What do you mean by trapping?
Trappings. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, drapery, is a facade.
A facade?
A facade that's kind of put up to help tell the story of how our morality developed. So for some people, that can be really useful. And, you know, I've talked to some theists and even some atheists that really need those sort of storytelling features to help them behave morally. Because for them, the what you're saying, the moral nihilism, isn't enough for them to really get a grasp on what morality is. That's fine. I mean, I'm open to them needing that. But what's kind of helped me is, like, learn that
we are alive. 1, 2, 3. All right, Ty, go.
Yeah. So, we talked a little bit about nihilism, existential nihilism, moral nihilism. I'm an absurdist. That's kind of where I come from. But a little bit modified, because I love Camus. Right. And you mentioned Camus earlier. And I think last time that we talked a little bit about Camus. The biggest thing to me, though, that I think there's something wrong there in the approach to the meaning of life, and that is it's really tainted by religion in the first place, by that need to have some answer to that question. Because the assertion that Camus makes is, you know, everybody has to deal with this question of what is the meaning of life? And I think that's a really Western way to look at things. And I think that's a very Christian, Judeo-Christian way of looking at the world. And I don't think that, I don't think it's universal, although it may be. That's unanswered for me. But also, like, the idea that the meaning of life has to come from elsewhere, out from ourselves, you know, not internally, I think that's sort of an assumption that we've been programmed to take into consideration and believe without questioning. So that's where I am. I'd rather question why we have that idea in the first place. Why do we think that the meaning of life has to come from a place other than ourselves? What are your thoughts about that? Like, what do you think that adds to the conversation?
Well, I guess, you know, as human beings, right? Even in no matter what culture you are, logic does permeate, you know, as our basis for what is true, right? We use it normally, and so we act as if logic will help guide us in whatever in truth finding we find ourselves in. So even if, let's say, you're like you're a Hindu or Buddhist from the East, like, or like interested in shamanism, right? There will be some sort of logical reasoning that you apply, but I guess it depends also on the sophistication of how you use those arguments, or I guess that rationalism. So I would say, like, when you use the normal social framework of why do I think life has meaning, or like that, I do agree with you, right? That we borrow from the Judeo-Christian theology or our Western way of thinking on how the world works and how, like, specifically, like, we derive meaning of our lives from somewhere. But that's why I also said, right, like, in the previous podcast, that we need to change the framework, you know, and that framework has to be something that is really like really removes all the things that we thought was true before. You know, if Nietzsche declared that God is dead, he thought that he realized that, hey, like, if people start to realize this, everything, like, society would break down, right? The civilization would, you know, everything would be permissible. And he was right. If all people were truly intellectually, you know, like, honest and really thought that, you know, if God is dead and this, they would sort of, it would be rational for them to act that way. But of course, people aren't rational, so they didn't act that way. But I think the solution to Nietzsche's problem of God being dead is that we need to remove God not just as a belief, but in how he has impacted how we humans, you know, think and see the world. You know what I mean? Like, we just need to, like, remove, like, stop asking where God belongs and just realize that, hey, you know, reality doesn't need God in it. It just is, and we're just here. I think that's what I sound like a Buddhist monk talking like this. I'm sorry.
So I want to draw an analogy here. So you know, in America, we have a lot of drug issues, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of our drugs come from cartels. Whether those are Mexican cartels, Chinese cartels, the cartels are the ones that are distributing. So if I were to say to you know, somebody, hey, you know, if we get rid of these cartels, we're going to get rid of the drug problem, right? Mm-hmm. We're gonna cut out the cartels. So we do some crazy military action, take out these cartels. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're gone now. Well, now, you know, what I haven't addressed is some of those underlying issues of why people in the first place are going to drugs for whatever reasons, right? And then also how those cartels kind of came into power in the first place based on the social and socioeconomic and political instabilities in their countries. So that's kind of how I view God and God beliefs and religion in general, right? So right now we exist in a society and in a world where yes, there is this sort of cartel of religion to parse the analogy out a little bit more, but there's some really deep underlying reasons why that exists. Mm-hmm. And that's political, that's historical. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons there. There's multiple things that kind of tie into that. But I think at the very root of it too, it's very sociological. And that's where I was for years. You know, I've been an atheist for a while now. In my early years, I was very firebrand, very anti-theist, and very, you know, almost antagonistic to Christians, and mainly Christians, but also Muslims and other people.
But I haven't had that phase yet. I don't think I ever will.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm glad I'm not, you know.
No, I see that in you, and I'm glad, because that's it's a negative phase to have, and you've seen it in other atheists, I'm sure. Yeah. And so, I'm glad that that's not something you're dealing with, and thumbs up to you for that. But as I've kind of come out of that and grown, mm-hmm. I've seen more and more that these things are not just, it's not a situation where you can go in and, you know, kill the cartel members and everything's hunky-dory.
Yeah.
It's a situation of there's some real issues underneath that. And that's where I think these conversations about the meaning of life are really, really important, because, you know, how do we deal with people that come out of religion and get disillusioned by their deconstruction? And they're like, What do I do now? What does life mean for me now? I think that's really important from a couple of different perspectives. One, for how do we help these people that are deconstructing out of Christianity? More and more come every single day. You know, you only have to go on to TikTok and see all these people that are coming out of Christianity. Yeah. And that's just the United States that I'm aware of, right? But the other question there too is, globally, how do we address, you know, the need there for some sort of meaning? I don't think that that's something that we can just solve philosophically. I think that's a larger political endeavor, and I think
I would say, like, in some sense. And I'm saying it's good, but if you think about it, like, China is 1/6 of the world's population, right? Like a billion plus. And a billion of them are like mostly atheists, because their government has enforced secularism, you know, and like has banned religion, right? And people practicing it, thus there's no cults there, and maybe just some sort of legalistic philosophy, right? So I guess if you look at China as exclusively the only world that exists, that it's already happened. If you know what I mean? In some sense, I'm lagging. Am I lagging?
Fantastic.
Right. So China, I guess, is already like a billion people living as a society, secular society. And you know, I guess there are religions, they're underground, but most of it is like the state, right? Just ruling everyone. So I'm not saying that it's good, but I'm saying it can already happen. And people and humans are existing without God, without any sense of what, or like about thinking deeply about these things. I'm sure a lot of Chinese do, but like they're not destroying each other or anything, you know. But the question is then, like, is China like the solution? I'm sure it's not. You know, I think that we could do better if we live like, if you really continue this sense of, you know, living in a world without God and finding meaning anyway. Like, what do you think, Ty?
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't recommend China as a solution, but I see where you're going there. Yeah. What I mean by politically is that there are some deep-seated issues that need to be solved collectively. So a lot of the issues that religion has stemmed out of and kind of latched onto are things like scarcity, are things like poverty and insecurity, as for financial insecurity, financial economic insecurity, and then, you know, also socioeconomic divides, which I don't think that a society like China really solves by its anti-democratic stance. Not an expert there. But that's my take from that. You know, take that as you will, filtered through my Western media apparatus. So, you know, my prescription there is going to be a little bit muddy. But I don't think that this can be solved just by saying something to somebody about philosophy, if that makes sense, right? I think that this is much more an issue. You know, we have to look at the social and economic impacts that spur religion on in the first place. Like, this doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? We know that these sorts of things result from a long history of people. And so if we look, for example, at Nordic countries, I think that's a good model to take a look at. Even the UK, you know, we can look there and we can see that secularism is on the rise. In the Nordic countries, I mean, almost everybody is non-religious or nominatively religious, like, you know, they're Catholic, but not really. Yeah. I think those sorts of situations are really good examples of how, you know, this sort of industrialization and really good social programs really can lead to people moving away and finding meaning away from religion. Because if you talk to somebody in the Nordic countries, it's not top of mind. Like, they don't really think about these questions and frame them in the same way. And as someone that's been out of Christianity for almost 8 years now, I don't think about the meaning of life framed in the same framework that what you're talking about. You know, I'm interested in philosophy. I think about that a lot, but I don't think about it in kind of the same terms that you're using.
You mean like nihilism? Like,
yes. No, I mean, yeah. Like, I don't think that the fact that there's no teleological or cosmological meaning is a negative thing, right? Like, to me, that just doesn't really even factor into the conversation. And so That's kind of where I come from there. So my project, you know, if I had to kind of label my philosophy, would be absurdism. Like, life is what it is. We got to make the best of it. And it is a conflict there between wanting some meaning of life and also not being able to get that answer in an ultimate way. But that, I think, is framed in the Western and Christian framework of, there, you know, we want to have some ultimate meaning of life. I don't think that everybody views it that way. And as I moved out of Christianity, I viewed it that way less and less. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I think the framework really matters.
Yeah, and then the framework does, and I keep talking about it. But I guess, you know, if I really wanted to, like, I would be an existentialist right now or an absurdist, you know. But what I find really problematic about that is the I guess, you know, if you think about it in the perspective of an analytic philosopher, it just doesn't hold up, you know. It's,
yeah, tell me where's the breakdown. What do you mean?
Well, what is your reasoning, right? Like, for example, oh, there is no cause inherent meaning in life. Therefore, I just need to create one. I think that's basically what existentialism is. Oh, wait, is there people talking in the background?
Not on my end.
I did, and I mean, like, can you hear?
Oh yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah, no, no worries.
I need to mute.
No, you're good. So I don't think if I read Camus correctly, when it comes to absurdism, I don't think that's quite the framing that I would use. The framing that I would use there is we inherently want to have some sort of meaning for life. That meaning for life is ultimately unattainable. And what we should do instead of, you know, killing ourselves, you know, we should have a cup of coffee instead of that. And the reason that we should do that is because we can, impart, you know, we can eschew, we can get rid of that need for meaning that's kind of been inbred into us and imparted to us from above by indoctrination and just by society at large, and just enjoy life. I think really when we look at Camus, you know, if you read his novels especially, what you really see there is the joie de vivre. You see the joy of living. And I think that's really kind of what I've latched on to is like, maybe there's no ultimate purpose. I don't think there is. It's pretty well given. And maybe I can see you.
Okay, it actually lagged. That's why I like was like just staring at into the abyss, you know. It lagged. I was just waiting for it to come back, but all right.
I was I can see you, bro.
Yeah, I know. But like, yeah, I was listening. Like, I was sort of it was laggy, but I got your point. And
cool.
So I also like I read The Stranger. Written by Camus, and you know, and also I bought the book like The Myth of Sisyphus.
Yeah.
But I guess you know it. I can see how it's really it can be like a great you know inspiration to move on. But I guess I guess I have my own way of like standards for how I have to measure what is real and how I you know like measure how I see the world. So what I became so strict with it so much that I even left like my whole core religion. You know what I mean? So but I get your point. Yeah. But I hope that I could find something similar. You know, like I'm actually in my journey right now. It's not like I feel like there's greatness in me, but I want to do something with my time, I guess, with whatever meaningless existence I have. And I'm actually writing a book about existentialism. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's a novel basically of like different individuals who hold extreme and various beliefs, like Christian, nihilist, Muslim, whatever, you know, because like I have experience with talking to these people, so I know like really how firm and every specific detail to their beliefs, so I could sort of break it down in that novel and see how they clash. But
yeah.
I guess like that the conclusion to my novel would be that the one who wins really is the one who overpowers the others. I think that really is the biggest, you know, and like that's the solution to each of their problem, which is if your belief system can overpower all others and rise above, then you will then your belief system will win. It depends. So but the definition of what will overpower though depends on is it like the charismatic influence, is it like rational argumentation, is it violence, is it like civil disobedience, or like it varies in many ways. Basically, power, right, is influence, is to be able to influence the beliefs of other people. And the language of power has resonated in our history for a long time. You know, the belief the beliefs that overpower the others rose above, right? Like in Greece, Hellenism, Alexander the Great's Hellenism, it overcame like most of Eastern Europe, right? The Romans and their Romanism, and then Catholicism, that influenced Europe, you know, Protestantism and their riots in across Europe. So yeah, I mean, communism and like in all of the USSR, China, North Korea, Vietnam, you know.
One of the things that I'd say to that point is that power is very much. So when we think about Protestantism, right? So Protestantism in and of itself was developed out of a power vacuum that was left by the church. And so there was a whole socioeconomic thing going on at that time, geopolitical nonsense happening that Protestantism developed out of. And then also technology played a huge role when we think about the printing press and how the Bible was available for people. So, you know, there's all those sorts of factors that power really, ideas, super powerful, but they need those other factors to kind of come in there. So I love the idea. I really do. And I think you're correct. But I think there's a lot of incidental factors there that we may not initially see when we look at history and you know. Have you read Jared Diamond, Guns, Germs, and Steel? Familiar at all?
Not yet.
I totally recommend that book. Okay. Totally recommend it. One of my favorites. It shows how, I mean, basically it breaks down the superiority of Europe. Instead of, you know, showing, hey, the white race is so fantastic and this is why they took over the world. No, it shows that basically there were some very, you know, mechanical and physical factors that led to their, you know, superiority in different ways in guns, germs, and steel, basically. And so those are things that I think about in terms of power, too, is like how all those fit together. And you know, speaking of novels, one of my favorite authors is Terry Pratchett, and he really takes this into consideration when he's writing his novels. He'll not only give like the ideological backgrounds of the people, but also like the physical backgrounds of the land and how that all kind of fits together. So I love it. I think that's that maybe is helpful. I don't know, but
yeah. I'm sort of thinking like, you know, I really wanna state all these things that it's not like, I guess when you're a writer, you have to have that sort of arrogance where, you know, you believe that your writing is worth reading by others, you know? So, but in order to have that confidence, I have to really study these things. And that's why, but for me to like, say like, oh, you know, this ideology, this belief system should be the one to conquer all the others. That's just bias of me, I guess. And I don't want to appear that way. So I guess
I was going to say, I think, you know, to some extent, you're right. You know, you have to have some knowledge as a writer to build up your confidence and, you know, making other people believe it. The other option there, too, is just owning up to your ignorance as you write. And that can be an even harder than learning. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that bias is a bad thing. And when it comes to how we live our lives, yes. But when it comes to writing, I mean, if that's what you want to write and that's what feels correct to you, write it. I mean, do it. And, you know, you can always go back later and critique it. I mean, that's, you can look at, you know, early works of anybody and see where, you know, their biases play and, you know, they've come back and they've changed those later. So I don't see anything wrong with that as far as from a written standpoint, it depends on what you want. You're trying to accomplish. You know, it really depends on what the goal is. But I think that's really interesting. I'd love to read that. So
yeah, and also I guess like Taya, we talked about meaning, right? And you having this Camus absurdism, and I'm still in. I just came from the vacuum, and you know I'm still in this realm of nihilism. I guess I would love to hear what the you know what the people listening are are like you know thoughts about this. So maybe like I'm gonna post this on Facebook. So I hope that some people watch it and we can let's respond to the comments. You know that would be fun.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
YouTube.
Yeah. Tag me. Sounds good.
All right. Well, I'm limiting the video podcast to an hour, if that's perfect. Ben, Ty, it's been awesome having you on the show and like talking to you about these things. And I hope like you feel like you've said it like almost all that you want to say about the topic, like meaning in life.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, and we can revisit this later and whatever we need to do, brother. So
yeah. And like any more in-depth conversation, let's have it in the comments. And I'd love some engagements from you guys. And, you know, as open-minded as I am, like, convince me I'm here.
There we
and
go.
Convince Sounds Ty. Good, he's as open-minded as I am, right? Here, Ty?
That's right.
All right. Right. Oh, it was so no matter how much stops this podcast has had, like internet interruptions, I'm glad I had it and it was fun, man. Thank you so much for your time, Ty.
You got it. Take care.
And I hope that it was a good experience for you too, bro. And
it's fantastic. I loved it. Right. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much and have a great day, guys.